This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
With them putting in these bans, it isn't really protecting anything. Even with the bans, they're still not selling many EVs. They haven't really fully committed to it at the dealer level.
If you haven't considered buying an electric vehicle yet, there's a good chance that in the not-so-distant future, the decision will already be made for you. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to automotive and environmental journalist Jim Motovalli to catch up on the latest news in the electric vehicle space. We learn about EV models of both cars and trucks coming down the pike, how traditional car dealerships in the U.S. have yet to fully embrace the transition to an electric fleet, a transition which experts like Motovalli see as inevitable, what's holding up the federal government's efforts to purchase electric vehicles, and why German and Japanese automakers remain behind the U.S. in terms of electric vehicle manufacturing. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jim Motovalli. Jim is an author and an auto and environmental journalist. Jim, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
It's great to be on.
So I wanted to get an update from you on the electric vehicle space. We did a piece not so long ago about hydrogen vehicles, but it's been a little while since we've profiled the meat and potatoes of the non-fossil fuel fleets out there. First, let's look at the U.S. Seems like Tesla gets all the headlines, but there's obviously a lot more to the market than Tesla.
Yeah, I think we're seeing an explosion of interest and development in the EV space. Not yet a huge increase in sales, but it's inching up. I would say that the pace is faster in Europe and China than it is in the United States. But in the U.S., we're seeing a lot of new startups. The U.S. excels at startup companies, and we're seeing some fairly powerhouse new entries, including Rivian and Lucid, that are about to start selling cars. And I think they're going to do quite well in the marketplace because their entries are smart and make sense. And we also have just about every global automaker, including all the American ones, switching to all EV or announcing dates when they will no longer be producing internal combustion engines. Some have actually started, announced that they're no longer going to be developing internal combustion engine programs, or that all the new models going forward will be electric. They're making announcements like that, which are pretty dramatic. And I'm not sure the public is fully aware that the entire international auto industry is moving to all electric battery cars, but that is what's going to happen. It's remarkable because I post these things saying what the automakers are planning to do, and I get these responses. People say, "Nah, I don't think it's going to happen." I'm telling you, it is happening. There's no going back. This is the only way forward for the auto industry right now. You have a lot of countries saying they're not going to allow the sale of internal combustion after a date certain, and it could be 2030 or 2035, but there's no way an automaker could actually continue to just sell internal combustion cars. They would be out of business.
Yes, I was shocked to see that Cadillac is moving to an all electric fleet. I mean, I think of Cadillac as being like the last bastion of the big gas guzzler, but it's obviously they've woken up to that reality too.
The whole luxury space is dominated today by Tesla. Tesla is the one having the actual sales, and they're doing better than BMW and Mercedes and Cadillac and all the traditional luxury players. So those automakers are realizing, you know, putting a big V8 or V12 into a car and adding a lot of luxury features, it's not going to sell cars. People are excited about the kind of performance you can get from EVs. And the range thing is largely becoming a thing of the past. You have the Lucid Air being launched with 517 miles of range, which is probably more than most gas cars. And I think 600 mile EVs are going to become common. There is the question of whether we even need to do 600 mile EVs, because that dictates a very big battery with long recharge times. You know, 400 miles would be nice. Anything more than that is probably unnecessary.
And when you're talking about the advantages of a big V8 or V12 engine, it's usually the acceleration and the muscle car element of it. But there's a very active racing series, Formula E, which is electric racing. And that seems to be the trend as well.
Right. And you have a lot of mainstream automakers, including Mercedes and Jaguar, that have jumped on the bandwagon of Formula E. It's now taking place all over the world. It's getting crowds to come out. And the other thing is, just even without racing, some of the new electric cars are just faster off the line than any of those big, powerful hypercars or muscle cars. The fastest cars in the world today are electric. You take something like the Tesla Plaid Edition, the Model S Plaid Edition, and it's 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds.
Now, put that in context compared to like a Lamborghini.
It's faster than anything produced by Lamborghini, period. It's probably faster than any McLaren, period.
It's really a rocket ship, almost.
Yeah, but it's also, that's the thing, see, it's a rocket ship, but it's also a family car that seats up to 7 people, is full of every modern convenience you could possibly imagine, and it's quite comfortable. It's a sedan. It's not some little entirely compromised two-seater sports thing. It is a very capable car with a trunk and a frunk in front. The batteries, again, they're under the car, so they don't take up any trunk space, so the trunk is full-sized. So there's just a lot of utility. And now we're seeing the most popular vehicle in America, the Ford F-150 pickup. They're coming up with a EV version of that called the Lightning. And I was totally knocked out by that, because it has 230 miles of range, or 300 in the luxury version of it. And it starts at under $40,000, which is, and it comes in a Super Crew form, which makes it cheaper, actually, than the gas version of it.
I don't have the numbers offhand, but I know that the Ford F-150 is a huge chunk of all vehicle sales in the U.S. What do you think this Lightning electric version is going to mean for that segment? Is it going to replace the F-150 sales, and is it going to also eat away at competitors, or do you think it's kind of going to be more competing with the Teslas?
I did a piece that is up at Forbes Wheels that looks at what every automaker is saying about when they're going to get out of gas cars. And not all of them have made a date commitment, but a lot of them have. And Ford is definitely moving in that direction. I do think the F-150 will eventually be all electric. I think the transition to that will be not super fast. I mean, they're moving faster in Europe and China. Right now, 44% of the EVs in the world are in China, and another 31% are in Europe, and we have just 17%. So there's a lot of growth potential in the American market. As soon as people realize that their next car is going to be electric, it'll be helpful. But, you know, in part, I did another story about EV marketing, and I do think there are some problems there, that the auto companies are making it difficult. I think they're partly at fault. Even though they're introducing new EVs, they're not marketing them properly. And there's a few things that are happening that are wrong there. One is, on the dealer level, the salesmen have not been doubling down on EVs, and they will point them out to you only sort of grudgingly, and they don't know much about them, which is bad. That is not good. They usually can't tell you much about them. I have a friend who's quite knowledgeable, and he went to buy a mini electric car, and he knew far more than the salesman, and he had such trouble getting it delivered, and they couldn't give him any answers of when it was going to be shipped. It was just a total, every bad experience you could imagine buying that. And I think they make more money when they sell like some high-end gas car and they're sitting next to each other in the showroom. I think that's an issue. I don't think they've been doing enough TV ads and social media type of stuff. And I think they need to be concentrating at this point. Most of the EV ads I've seen just sort of celebrate, our company is one with nature or something like that. And I don't think that's actually the appeal of the EV. It's not an environmental appeal. Tesla isn't selling EVs based on the fact that they're cleaner. They're basically selling them as better cars. And I think they should be emphasizing the performance, the quietness, the fact that you get a federal rebate, all these different things that you don't have to go to gas stations anymore.
That's maybe one of the real appeals for the F-150 for a lot of truck owners, and that's kind of why it could be a good litmus test for the overall EV market in the U.S.
Yeah, I think the truck buying public is traditionally a pretty conservative market, I mean just in the terms of what they buy, and this truck market is strongest in some of the states where there are the fewest EVs, so it will be a little bit of an uphill battle. I really don't think it's going to turn around, even though I think the car is really attractive.
Oh, I dream a highway back to you, love. A winding ribbon with a band of gold. A sea.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to automotive and environmental journalist Jim Motovalli. So you were just talking about the Ford F-150's electric version. I think it's called the Lightning. What other electric trucks are on the horizon, if there are, of note?
Well, it's interesting because right now, as I'm talking to you, there are no electric pickups on the market. But there's like 8 of them coming. But Tesla is going to have its Cybertruck. I don't have an exact date for that, which is very radically styled. A lot of people thought they were kidding, but they're not kidding. It does look like that.
Yeah, it looks almost like a stealth bomber.
Right. A company called Bollinger is doing an electric pickup. I'm not sure whether that's going to be successful or not. It's very expensive. It's $125,000, and they're emphasizing its ability to go off-road. I don't know if that's going to do very well. I think it's too expensive. I think that market was basically reinvented by Ford when it said $40,000 for the Lightning. There's a electric Silverado coming, a Chevy Silverado, which is another very popular vehicle, so that's important. They haven't announced the price for that, but they said it would have 400 miles of range. Lordstown is another startup. They've been sort of plagued by various things, but they're supposed to have an electric pickup that sounds credible, but the company has been floundering, so I don't know what's going to happen there. And I'm probably missing one or two, but there will be a number of electric pickups on the road.
And with the infrastructure bill being discussed, I remember seeing that a piece of it was to electrify the federal automotive fleet. Is there any kind of exclusivity with a particular automaker that you're aware of, or is this going to be more of a fragmented purchase from the federal government?
Well, let me just sort of unpack that. When Biden came into office, he said he wanted to make the entire federal fleet electric. And that's a mandate he can do without federal funding. I mean, they buy vehicles anyway. They don't need new funding for that. But the thing is, the government buys a lot of pickup trucks, and they didn't really have any on the market, so, and certainly not that were ready for fleet purchase. So even though Biden announced that, they were still buying a lot of gas pickup trucks. With these new entries into the pickup field, that they'll have a lot more vehicles to choose from. Now, the post office thing is a whole separate entity. I mean, the procurement process for buying new vehicles for the post office, I think it started even before Trump was in office. been dragging out for a long time. And the post office under Louis DeJoy, Trump appointee, recently made an award to a company that does not make EVs and snubbed the company that did. And there was a lot of calls for that consideration to be reversed. I'm not sure it's going to be. The company that got the contract said it was open to building EVs. It doesn't really have experience in that area, so I don't know what's going to happen. I think postal vehicles really should be electric.
It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? I remember looking at the mail carrier's car just the other day, and it was like super rusted out, and that's not atypical, I imagine.
No. The replacement of the federal fleet for the post office is long overdue. And it's, like I said, it's been dragging out forever. Right now, it's sort of in limbo. I mean, they did make the award, but I don't know if it's going to stand. Now, there's also a large fund that the federal government appropriated, and I think it was in the amount of $25 billion. This is, I believe, when it goes all the way back to George W. Bush. And they made some awards to Tesla and to Fisker. Some of the loans went bad. And the same, not exactly the same agency, but the Department of Energy made a loan to a sort of high-profile solar company, Solyndra, that went bad. And that got a lot of attention. And the result is that program sort of went underground and they didn't make any more awards. So they've been sitting on a very large appropriation of money. And under Biden, that has been reawakened, you could say. And they're starting to, well, they haven't made any awards yet, but they're going to. It's considerably revitalized. And Chelsea Sexton, who's a big EV proponent, is now an advisor to that program. So I would expect there to be some smart loans. It's a loan program. Like Tesla paid back all its loans. Ford is making payments on its loans, but other companies defaulted. So that's sort of why that program was dormant for a while. But there is federal money. What happens with the infrastructure bill is unclear. The goal of the Biden administration was like 500,000 EV charging stations around the country. I don't even know if we need that many charging stations. 80% of all the charging is going to be at home. I think it's important that the federal government be involved in funding this stuff, but I don't think it's critical. It's going to happen without that. I mean, if Republican recalcitrance means there's no funding for EVs, it doesn't kill anything.
So, Jim, in your piece in Media Village, you write about how dealers are actually fighting EV sales and lobbying against states allowing direct sales by these startup automakers like the Rivians of the world. What are the dealers afraid of here in this calculus?
You have to go back in history and to look at the unusual way in which the auto dealership thing was set up. This is going back to like the 20s or the 30s. I'm not sure exactly when, but there was fear that if the automakers owned the dealerships, they would have too much power and they would force out any competitors, like independent competitors. So they basically dictated that auto dealers would be independent. And that's been the situation. The result is that a whole lot of dealers got very, very wealthy. I mean, auto dealers, you make a lot more money doing that than being on Wall Street or something. So they had a lot of interest in keeping the status quo. And when Tesla started selling directly, a lot of dealers went to their state legislators and said, you've got to stop this. It's going to kill our business and stuff like that. So some states allowed direct selling and others didn't. But the thing is that even with these bans, I don't know, maybe 17 states, I did a piece on it. I don't remember the exact numbers, but as I said here, in 2020, 79% of EV sales were direct sales, meaning that those are almost all Teslas. And franchise dealers, the actual automakers, they only sold 44,000 vehicles around the whole country. It's not a lot of EVs. So with them putting in these bans, it isn't really protecting anything. Even with the bans, they're still not selling many EVs, and it's because of the reasons I said before, that they haven't really fully committed to it at the dealer level. They make so much money selling gas cars, and this is something new. It requires them to set up some kind of like charging infrastructure at the dealership and help people out in getting charging stuff in their garages and things like that, stuff that they're not used to doing. So they just have been sluggish about it. So they have not really gotten on board that well.
It seems like a real lost opportunity. What you're describing sounds almost like the taxi cab industry lobbying against the Ubers and the Lyfts in their communities, but you could understand why the taxi cab companies are holding on to their last bastion of revenue for themselves, but the dealers have a huge opportunity to reignite their industry and have a huge influx of these new, desirable, cleaner cars, and yet it sounds like they're still kind of trying to block the sales instead of getting on board with it. It's head-scratching.
It is, and the Sierra Club did a survey in 2019, found that 74% of auto dealers aren't selling EVs at all. And at 28% of the ones that were, the salesman provided no information about how to charge an EV. That's really incredibly damning. They have not got on board, and I think this is one of the main reasons the U.S. is lagging behind China and Europe in selling EVs and marketing them. In China, they can basically dictate that everybody buys an EV. In Europe, they can do it via regulation. They say no gas cars in our central cities, and they can say no electric or no gas cars for sale after a certain date. They can impose restrictions on tailpipes and fine automakers that don't meet like the average CO2 emissions, all these different things. And the result is that every automaker goes electric. We tend to give our businesses a lot more freedom to operate here in the U.S. So the Biden administration just reimposed or just re-announced, actually I don't think they've been announced yet, but it's working on new standards, fuel economy standards for the country. It was set back during the Trump administration from the Obama standards, and Biden is going to bring it at least partway back. I've seen some criticism that his plan, which is based on the California plan, doesn't go far enough. But I haven't seen the actual statistics or the actual plan because I don't think it's been announced yet. But there's already some criticism that it isn't going far enough from the environmental movement.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to automotive and environmental journalist Jim Motovalli. So you've mentioned how the sales rates are higher in Europe and China than in the U.S. for EVs, but where are the Toyotas, Subarus, Mercedes in this very promising category, Jim?
There are two reasons why German and Japanese automakers are lagging behind, and they're rather different. In Europe, the automakers largely banned it around the idea of green diesel and dismissed or downplayed EVs. The result was the Volkswagen diesel scandal, which actually engulfed all the German automakers. And since then, they've had to play catch-up, which they're trying to do. They're trying to get into leadership positions with EVs, but they were set back by this long push for diesel, which is now definitively dead. I mean, there's no diesel development at all. And diesel will cease to be, except for trucks. I don't think we're not gonna see diesels in cars and SUVs and stuff like that going forward. So that delayed the German automakers quite a bit. And in Japan, instead of betting on diesel, they bet on fuel cells. And that has also been something of a dead end. I think that fuel cells might become motive power for some trucking, because it does give you longer distance travel, but there's huge logistics reasons it's not really taking off. There was a startup company that was going to do hydrogen power for trucks, and it hasn't really been able to get off the ground, and there was a mini scandal involving that company. And the automakers have been trying to sell hydrogen cars, but there's really only hydrogen infrastructure in Southern California, and the rollout around the country hasn't really happened. It costs like $1 million to $2 million to build a hydrogen station versus about $10,000 for a electric vehicle charging structure. So it's completely not feasible to do the hydrogen thing. And I think the Japanese automakers are sort of backing away a little bit from that. They're still pretty committed to hydrogen, though.
I can't imagine why a Subaru, which is so popular in Northern California, for example, you see Subarus everywhere, and most of the people who buy them are middle class or upper middle class who like to enjoy the environment, ski, use the all-wheel drive element of Subarus, and yet I don't think Subaru has any electric vehicles, do they?
It's one of the biggest laggards in the whole industry in terms of EVs. I don't see anything much coming out of Subaru. If they have electric vehicles, I haven't seen them. They have a few hybrids. They have some progressive elements, and their cars early on were what they call PZEVs, which are partial zero emission vehicles. So they tend to be low emission, their vehicles, which is a good thing, but an electric car leader, they're not. So you have companies like Honda. The first EVs from Honda, which are going to come out in 2024 for sale in the American market, will actually be built by General Motors and use GM Ultium motors. That's how far behind, Ultium batteries, that's how far behind they are, companies like Honda, because of their long detour into fuel cells. They are not leaders at all in battery technology. They're having to learn that. They claim that they'll soon be catching up. But again, when you have a detour into another technology and they spend a lot of money on it, it means that they weren't spending money on battery development and now they're playing catch up just like the Germans are. The U.S. is really ahead of everybody in terms of battery technology.
I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. If people want to find Jim's work, he it's Jim Motovalli, that's spelled Motavalli. It's jimmotovalli.com, and he writes for Barron's and Media Village and Tree Hugger and plenty of other places. Jim Motovalli, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Great to be on. Thanks.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Alex Wise, Gillian Welch, and Bobby McFerrin.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's S-E-A changeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.